Well, all party members were circularised with the special meeting on Poland, and the circular did ask for members who wished to speak or had any statements for me to do so, and then we could have dealt with it from there. But since we've only had the one statement from Comrade Buick, which I've done sufficient copies so that you could all have one, which is satisfactory in that point of view. Comrade Double wrote to say that he would like to speak, and so if he wishes to speak first, then in view of the fact it's not a big meeting, anybody that wishes to come in then afterwards can do so. Is that okay? Are you agreed to that?
Yeah.
Are you electing the chairman?
I am the chair.
Just happened.
So, would you like to speak up first, mate?
Yes, certainly. Yes.
Okay, then the floor is yours.
Well, let me say first of all, the reason I've put my name down to speak on this is not because I've got anything new to say about the situation in Poland, or for that matter, anything particularly profound to say about it. The main reason I wanted to say something at this meeting was because I wanted to ensure, or try to ensure, that this meeting actually dealt with the really fundamental issues which I think that the events in Poland over the last 2 years have given rise to. Now, these are not new, they are not new issues. They are issues that have been with the party since its very foundations, and there's a variety of articles you will find in practically every publication of standard dealing. They are two issues, in my opinion. Firstly, the question of political democracy, political rights, political liberties, and our attitude as socialists to that. That's the first thing. The second issue is the question of trade unions and the Socialist Party's attitude towards trade unions and what exactly we support and we don't support in the way of trade unions. They are the two particular issues. Now, I'm going to use a couple of quotes from a couple of party pamphlets. Mainly so that I can talk around them a bit. Let me say that I haven't selected these for any particular reason. I think the arguments in these two pamphlets, Questions of the Day and the Trade Union pamphlet, I think you will find them the same issues argued in a wide amount of the party's literature. But the reason I picked these two particular pamphlets are because they are prominent pamphlets. I would imagine practically every party member has read them, has got them, they've got them to hand. And so that's the reason why I'm picking these particular pamphlets. Now, so let me have a look first of all at the first issue, the question of political democracy, political rights. Now, incidentally, the quote I'm going to make, you may argue that this is concerned with underdeveloped countries, so-called underdeveloped countries, that is very backward capitalist nations where capitalism is still developing at a very low level. You could argue that. I would say this applies to Poland. But if you wish to argue that, then you don't get over the problem, because you still then got to come back and tell me what exactly is the situation as regards our attitude to political democracy and political liberties in countries where there is not a means by which a socialist majority can take political power by democratic means. You've still got to answer that question. So I'm going to use this quote. As I say, it refers specifically to countries where capitalism is a very low level of development. Well, the quote is from page 64, Questions of the Day. In many of the less developed countries, political democracy does not yet exist. The governments there, whether representing the old landowning or the emerging capitalist class, stifle criticism and threaten the organisation of opposition parties and even of trade unions as plots to overthrow them. In such circumstances, socialist activity is very difficult, and the workers, being only a minority of the population, besides trying to organise into a socialist party, also to struggle to get the freedom to organise into trade unions and win elementary political rights. As in the advanced capitalist countries, however, this should still involve opposition to all other parties in order that the socialist issue shall be kept free from confusion. Now, as I say, there's certain parts in that which you could take them out and it would still apply to Poland. That's what I want to keep that in mind and keep Poland in mind, and I want to raise the certain issues. I want to ask the question, what does that mean? What does that mean? That's what I want members, if they can, to clarify for me, because I don't think I am particularly clear on it. Now, it certainly doesn't mean that when it says that we will support means a struggle to get freedom to organise into trade unions and win elementary political rights, it doesn't mean that we're going to support or any organisation that's collaborating with a political party. Certainly doesn't mean that. I mean, no one's going to argue about that. We're not going to support workers who are involved with a political movement of any kind, I would think. I mean, I'll make a distinction here between a political movement and a political party. I mean, if you think that is the case, I would like to hear that. But I would think that we're not going to support that if they're involved with any political movement of any kind. So we don't mean that. Now, does it therefore mean that we support workers who are non-socialists in their struggle to win trade union and elementary political rights? Now, you might, that sounds very nice to say that, we support non-socialists. But again, you've got to tell me what that means, because, unfortunately, the idea, I mean, there is this sort of 18th century idea of the noble, innocent person, the noble savage, as they call it, totally innocent, totally uncorrupted or uninfluenced by society at all, who somehow is dead, is an innocent person who can somehow advocate and work for trade union and political rights, and but themselves has no political ideas at all. Now, this sort of view, I would say, is an abstract concept which has no meaning in reality. No meaning if you get down to earth and get involved in actual trade unions or any real situation. That type of thing doesn't exist. Man is a political animal. All workers are political. They're brought up with ideas, values of the capitalist system, and they hold those views. And if you are going to turn around and support and say that you're supporting workers who are not socialists in trying to win trade union and elementary political rights, you must understand that you must be supporting workers who have political opinions and political views which are opposed to that. You can make that distinction in an abstract sense, but on the ground, in the real situation, it is not so clear, and I would like members perhaps to clarify what their position is on that. You must also keep in mind that there may be socialists in Poland. There may be a socialist movement in Poland, for all I know. I mean, I don't know whether there is or not, but there may be socialists organising in Poland. We have to advocate, are these socialists supposed to be organising with these non-socialist workers to establish trade unions and elementary political rights? That's another question. Lastly of all, you might interpret this to say that what we mean is that socialists in these countries, socialists on their own, should organise together as socialists to establish trade unions and political democracy. They should not collaborate with any other workers at all. Only socialists should do that. You may interpret this to mean just that. Now, then the question arises. Then you have the question. Because I think a very important part of this quote is the very last piece. And it says that in order that the socialist issue shall be kept free from confusion. And I think that word confusion is very important. Because if you're going to advocate that socialists should go out, we should support socialists or advocate that socialists in Poland or any other country should start going out and advocating this, that workers should struggle, or they themselves actually struggling, to establish political democracy, then the question arises, isn't this bringing into our argument, or isn't this smearing our case, as it were, with confusion? Because what's going to happen? You see it today, I mean, I've seen it in Birmingham and every place. You go out on a demonstration and advocate political democracy, and what you'll find is you'll have a whole string of people coming on behind you, supporting you, saying, well, yeah, we support you. We support you, yes. Before you know where you are, you'll have every Tom, Dick and Harry supporting you on that issue. So are you sort of, how are these socialists in Poland, in the real situation, not in some abstract sort of ideal sense, but in the real situation, how are these socialists in Poland or anywhere else, by struggling to establish political democracy, going to keep themselves separate? If you do advocate, they should be separate from other workers who support the same thing. How are you going to do that? How are you going to do that? That's the question you've got to be answering. Now, on the question of political democracy, let me say that political democracy is not... It's not kept, let me say this, political democracy, once it is established, and workers may well have done, and they have done in the past, a great deal to establish democratic forms of organisation, and have done a lot to organise, to establish a certain element of voting rights in various electoral systems. They've done a lot for that. But the reason why it's maintained, the reason why it still exists, is not because it's necessarily something to do with the workers' interests. It's maintained because it's in the interest of the capitalist class. That's why political democracy is maintained. The reason why the 1867 Electoral Reform Act was introduced in this country was because it was a means of dividing the working class, a means by which they saw they could cream off the so-called aristocracy of labour into the and assimilate them into the general capitalist sort of supporting the capitalist system. That's why they introduced that. They saw this as a means. Also, as well, you could say the political parties saw a means of various sections of the capitalist class saw a means of maintaining their political power by advocating getting support from a section of workers. Certainly, there was that case as well. But that is another reason. And since that date, the extension of parliamentary democracy has not reflected solely the demands of workers for greater voting rights, but has been something that has reflected the interests of the capitalist class in being able to assimilate workers into the democratic political system and to be able to get them to support capitalism and support capitalist parties, political parties that support capitalism, such as the Labour Party and all the other political parties that have come up. That's the first thing. In Poland, we have seen in Poland a classic example of this, where all the attempts of workers there to establish political rights, okay, yes, in the short term, the regime there conceded them. As soon as the opportunity arose, what did they do? Get rid of it. And as long as the capitalist class have control of the machinery of government, as long as a socialist majority have not captured political power, then that is what will happen. The ruling class will just wait its time, and then eliminate the political rights. And you see this, you look at any country in the world, the vast bulk of countries, I'm not talking about a minority issue here, I'm talking about an issue that affects the vast bulk of workers throughout the world. Greece, Turkey, South America, any country you look at, democratic rights are established in the short term, and as soon as they are no longer in the interest of the capitalist class, then a military regime or something takes over. Now,
Mike, can I just interrupt you by saying...
Yes, sorry, am I...
There is a limited time. You started at 3:14, it's now 3:28, that's 14 minutes. If I'm going to assume everybody has 15 minutes at one time.
All right, I'll try and rack it up this time. So I've got the trade unions yet.
Well, I mean, you can come in later on and see how time.
Yeah, all right. Well, I'll quickly try and wrap up my points here, which are several points I'm going to make.
I suggest that we do let Mick go on? I don't know as many people here.
Well, are you all agreed to that?
Yeah.
All
right. Well, I mean,
there's a limit to the amount we can hold in our heads at any one go.
Yes, you've just thrown me off tack a bit there. So,
trade unions.
Yes, I just want to make sure I finish on political democracy. Yes, I think basically I've said, I'll go on and just say something about trade unions. All I wanted to say about political democracy, just to wrap that up a bit, is that... the existence, just one point, the existence or non-existence of political democracy in countries does not, as far as I'm concerned, there is no evidence to show that the level of socialist consciousness amongst workers is reflected in that situation. What I'm just saying there is, just in case you're arguing that political democracy provides the atmosphere within which socialist consciousness can develop, as far as I can see, there is no evidence to actually show that. Marx himself... And Marx is one of the major conflicts between Marxism, I dare use that word, and modern sociology is, in fact, that there is no, in Marxist terms, there is no such thing as the totalitarian regime. This is a sociological concept that, under Marxist beliefs, there is always a means by which the grassroots, as it were, which is the very foundation, the people at the bottom of society, as it were, can organise, can exchange ideas, can develop alternative views, etc. That was Marx's whole, one of his bases for the materialist conception of history, was that this grassroots movement, there was always a situation in which it could develop. There was not, that no government, no system had a totalitarian control. I'm saying that in relation to countries like Russia, this myth of Russia being a totalitarian regime is a myth. It is a myth. There is a means by which the workers can organise an opposition in that country. That's, anyway, I won't say much more. I just want to say something. Trade unions. A quote from trade unions. Yes, I'll say something on trade unions. From the trade union pamphlet, page 11. It was during the years before 1824 when workers learned how to organise in unions, despite the opposition of the employers and repression by the government, that the foundations were laid for working class organisation, both industrial and political. It was the first victory of the organised workers. Only a beginning, but never since then has it been possible for the capitalist class wholly to put the clock back. It was an opening phase of the modern class struggle, continuing through the 19th century and spreading to other countries as capitalism developed. Whatever the mistaken policies adopted by the unions from time to time, working class organisation on the industrial field in the struggle against the employers was an indispensable means by which workers gradually began to learn how to deal with capitalist exploitation. It remains the obvious line of advance for workers in Russia and other countries in which employers and governments still resort to crude methods of repression comparable with those of early British capitalists. Now, what that basically means, as far as I read that, it means that somehow trade unions are a necessary step towards socialism. Now, that's how I read that. Trade union organisation somehow finds the basis. I don't think that is, in fact, the party case, actually. But just to bring the point out, let me say that members of this party, some of them belong to trade unions, some of them are active trade unions, some of them don't belong to trade unions at all. Some of them have come to belong to be socialists through their activity in trade unions, some have come to be socialists through a variety of circumstances. There is no evidence to show, as far as I'm aware, that activity in trade unions is a necessary thing for members to become socialists. Second point I want to make in that is, trade unions in most parts of the world are very small organisations. They have never represented more than a small minority of workers. It is only really in this country, I think, that today that they represent a significant, I would say, majority of workers. I think it's only now, in the last few years, that situation has ever come about. They have always represented a very small minority of workers and workers' interests. I'm wondering if what I'm saying here is, are we looking at trade unions from a sort of Anglo view, the point of view of England? If we examine other countries, you see that very different situations in relation to trade unions have developed. In Germany, in France, Italy, I believe, it was the political parties who established the trade unions. The political parties. Trade unions in these countries were originally developed by political parties. They were unorganised political parties. In Germany, after the Second World War, they restructured them. That itself was restructured by the various governments, by the representatives of the capitalist class, you could say. You could say, sorry, expedient. But nevertheless, that's an experience totally different from the experience that we've had in this country. In different countries of the world, you see that. Now, I would say, we look at East European countries, we see another development of trade unions. Totally different type of thing, where they've been controlled by the state, taken over by the state, that is, and where now you see a struggle for workers to organise themselves independently of trade unions. Now, we accept the party's case quite straightforward that trade unions are means by which workers can defend their living standards within capitalism. Now, if you wish to make out an argument that there is something beyond that, that they are a step towards socialism, then I would like to see that made clear. Now, if members do believe that, I would like to see that made clear. What exactly the foundations were. May I say, thirdly, one thing, and I'll wrap up. Recently, I've been involved in a legal case against the union I belong to over, in fact, the political activities of the union. And I've had to do a bit of research into statistics on a number of things like this. One of the things that I found was, regarding members' attitudes to trade unions, 80% of trade unionists believe that there is a fundamental distinction between the role of trade unions and the role of political parties. They believe, as we believe, that trade unions are concerned with defending the living standards. And that's what they should be concerned with. they set out. And I think 80% were opposed. This is concerning the political levy at the moment. They were opposing having the trade unions should be involved in making payments to farmers. Now, here's an example, I think, where you have the whole of the left wing, the Labour Party, all of them, who say that, who cannot make any distinction between trade unions and political parties. We have a clear-cut case where we make that distinction. We have a clear-cut case where we make that distinction, and here's a situation which doesn't often arise, but the vast bulk of the workers actually support us in this. Now, I think we should be exploiting that and making good ground. But anyway, I just want to clarify that point. If many members believe that trade unions are some necessary, as seems to be implied in that pamphlet, and which to some extent I think I have felt this. I don't say any members have put this view on the Poland issue, but I have felt it's there somehow, that members do believe that somehow the establishment of trade unions in Poland is somehow some move towards socialism. I would like, if members do believe that, to clarify that for me. Let me say this. I'm not trying to put forward any particular dogmatic line. I'm quite willing to open up all my views to this. What I want is a case that I can actually argue. In every situation, that's what I want. At the moment, I'm not clear. I have to admit, I'm not clear. On some things, I think this is my view, and some things, I'm not sure. I would like this meeting, if possible, to clarify some of the points that I've made.
All right, thanks, mate. Anybody else wants to speak now? Come in.
Well, I did bring up some notes, and some of the points that Colin Devil has made, stuff that I would like to speak about if members prefer if they want. Is that all right, Colin?
Yeah, you want to come in?
Go ahead.
Right. Colin Devil, there's two questions, basically, around democracy and trade unions. We have here today, I think, three really important questions. First one is the one about the party's analysis. If anyone can't hear me, just tell the party's analysis of what happened in Poland. Second one is a question of the party's policy regarding trade unions, regarding reformist organisations, and regarding the question of industrial or political action. And finally, there's a question of the actual facts about solidarity, which did take quite a while to get through. Came through in a rather hickledy-pickledy way, and certainly some of the people who had to deal with Poland at first were relying on what came through in the media, and some of it was not totally accurate. There's a question of whether Solidarity was a trade union or a political organisation, or did it, as some people think, have a triple role. The question of whether the fact that it was reformist and nationalist and church influence, whether it was democratic. And at first, of course, we got glowing reports from the left wingers that it was a very democratic organisation. With hindsight, looking back and hearing some of the reports that have come out since then, we would not, I think, support that statement so strongly. The question of its demands for economic reform, which I referred to by Conrad Buick in his statement, and which were brought out very clearly at the Autumn Congress last year by Solidarity, but which have been being worked on by Solidarity ever since August 1980. They were in discussions with the government about economic reform, which was point four of the Gdańsk Agreement, I think. And there's a question that it completely accepted the status quo. It accepted the leading role of the Communist Party. It accepted that it did not have a political role. That is conceded in point one of the Gdańsk Agreement. And in that same point, it stated clearly that they have a socialist system in Poland. Now, these are some of the reasons why I took issue with statements in the party's leaflet, which appear to imply or give the impression that this party supports Solidarity. And I quoted in my letter to the EC and the Pamphlets Committee that the draft statutes of Solidarity included as its aims to attempt to bring the workers' interests into harmony with the function of the enterprise. In other words, they saw workers as having a role, the union as having a role in partnership with management, and to cultivate an active attitude among workers for the good of the country and of all workers. And here you see them putting the nation before the class. Now, I'm going to refer to a statement the party made a very long time ago and has re-endorsed at conference only about 10 years ago. And I quoted this in a letter to the Pamphlets Committee, which EEC also had the benefit of hearing. And this is, I think, what Common Purity is referring to at the beginning of his statement, but I think it's better if we put it as it was endorsed by conference. The basis of the actions of trade unions must be a clear recognition of the position of the workers under capitalism and the class struggle necessarily arising therefrom. In other words, they must adopt the socialist position if they can to justify their existence at all. All action of the unions in support of capitalism or tending to sidetrack workers from the only path that can lead to their emancipation should be strongly opposed. But on the other hand, trade unions being a necessity under capitalism, any action on their part along some lines should be heartily supported. This statement I read from the manifesto of the party, which was published, I think, a year or so after the party came into existence. And it has, as far as I know, remained the party's case ever since. It was quoted in an EC statement in 1969, which was endorsed by conference about 3 years later in no fewer than three different resolutions. And so this is actually what the party's position is on the matter, and that is why I objected to the use of the word support in relation to solidarity in that leaflet. In particular, if you look at the Gdansk Agreement, you'll find among their 21 demands a great many demands of a reformist nature. The question of old age pensions, and health services, pensions, maternity leave, housing policy, travelling allowances, perhaps of industrial glamour, and above all, this economic reforms question, including something again which we don't agree with, workers' councils and workers' self-management. Through 1981 in particular, Solidarity was greatly exercised in workers' self-management, and they were prepared to do a deal with the government whereby the government would get its higher prices if Solidarity could get workers' self-management. And this, I'm sure, is something that socialists would not regard as action upon some lands. Now, there is also the question of their acceptance of the status quo, the failure to aim for political power at the very beginning, the acceptance of the leading role of the Communist Party, the acceptance of national interest as being dominant, and their talks about unemployment and the trade-off of price rises against workers' management. And the ideas that they put forward of economic reform, which included re-establishment or an enhancement of the private sector, in this country, when you have a working class movement like the Labour Party, they tend to see the answer to workers' problems as being nationalisation, because they see the problem as being private enterprise. You have the opposite situation in Poland and Eastern Bloc countries. They see the solution to their workers' problems as being private enterprise, because they see state enterprise doesn't solve the problems. And obviously, from our point of view as socialists, we would say they're both wrong. They're both chasing after red herrings. Now, this party has made several statements about Poland. There was a September 1980 EC statement and leaflet. October 1980, Comrade Buick wrote an article for the Standard, Poland Workers Take a Step. And there was also a statement in the December 1980 Standard in an answer to a letter by S. Thomas, who wrote in saying, "What is our attitude to non-socialist organisations in countries like Russia? Do we support them or don't we, if they're arguing for political rights?" Then in January-March 1981, Comrade Buick produced in Socialism Mondial an article on La Pologne Capitaliste. April 81, Comrade Coleman wrote a long article in Standard about the lessons of what had happened, and from the Monsieur Gary Jacobson, an article, a brief statement about censorship being lifted, I think, in June 1981. And then myself, I produced two articles during the winter of November and January and February. And there was a pamphlet in his leaflet in December 1981, which was printed in the Standard in an amended form. Now, to start off, some of these statements were counting chickens which were not properly hatched. From Buick in 1980, the striking workers, he said, achieved an important victory. they haven't achieved a victory in my view. But maybe I'm too much of a sceptic. He stressed, however, that trade unions are no threat to the continuance of capitalism. But, in my view, it was unfortunate that his article failed to stress the necessity of political action. And if you look at the last paragraph of that article, you'll see what I mean by it. He stresses that they must organise, but he does not say they must organise politically. The same criticism can be made of the article in Socialism Mondial, again by Cornu. He leaves unstated the necessity of political organisation. Why I raise this point, which may seem a small one, is that his articles could be read and agreed with by syndicalists, people like the ICT, who were saying that the mass strike is round the corner and Poland is the first step. If you look at the stuff they were publishing about Poland, you'll find they went very euphoric about it. This was to them a great big thing which proved their case that syndicalism really did work. You could force a government to change its policies by industrial action on a large scale. And this has never been our case. And if we are to make it clear what our case is, we must emphasise the necessity of political action. Another statement, the answer to this letter by S. Thomas, published in December 1980, about our attitude to pressure groups in Russia, etc., who work for democracy. They say, the editorial committee in their reply said that socialists work only for the abolition of capitalism, but that we must support such movements as they are a first step towards democratic rights. But, again, we have another but, we must encourage workers to organise for the conquest of political power. In my view, this statement was very muddled concerning our attitude to non-socialist pressure groups, which was what the question was, and especially if you apply it to something like solidarity. There is, for instance, for non-secretary, this question about a first step. I don't think it is to achieve, we must support movements of this sort. They're not necessarily a first step towards democratic rights. And democratic rights, as Conrad Double pointed out, by themselves, don't assist socialist understanding. We've stated it in our literature again and again. By themselves, they don't do much. It all depends how you use it. And then, if we work solely for the abolition of capitalism and to bring about socialism, as stated in that letter, we cannot support non-socialist organisations. You can't do both. And that's why that letter again seemed to be very muddled indeed. And if you refer to the statement in Questions of the Day on page 64, which covered Double quoted, the idea, I'd like to answer the point he raised about this being a movement, a step forward. No, but as in the advanced capitalist countries, any action by workers, socialists, trying to organise into a socialist party, should still involve opposition to all other parties. In order that socialist issues should be kept free from confusion. I think your comrade Double's right on that point. I think he is wrong, however, in his interpretation of the statement in the trade union leaflet that industrial organisation remains the obvious line of advance. I read that as simply meaning a line by which workers can develop their ability to resist the employers and the employing class. I don't read it as a step forward towards socialism. I never have been. We find this first step to liberation question coming up again in Comrade Coleman's article in April 81 in the Standard. The first step to liberation, he says, is the formation of workers' own democratic trade unions. And from this, he goes on to say that Solidarity is a well-organised and democratic union who deserve the support and admiration of the workers of the world. This is the first time we come across this phrase of support and admiration, which occurred again in that leaflet by the Pamphlet Committee last winter. Now, again, he also defines class struggle as meaning more pay and better conditions. To us, there are two aspects of class struggle. There's the industrial struggle, which does indeed involve things like more pay and better working conditions. But there's also the political struggle. And we do not usually put down the industrial struggle as the be-all and end-all. And in the final paragraph, the next step forward, like Comrade Buick, he omits to mention that the organisation we're talking of is a political organisation. And he states that... I'm going out to my own article in November 81, but I am not entirely uncritical of that. It was done in the summer holidays when I was under a lot of pressure. But I had the benefit of having longer time, really, in which to work towards that article. I was working on it for some months. I stressed the existence of some socialist awareness in Poland, but mentioned that this was only a minority viewpoint. The Jedność articles from which I quoted, which indicated a level of socialist consciousness, very nearly up to ours, I should think, and I'd like to meet the people who wrote those articles. Jedność was nevertheless a solidarity publication. It agreed with solidarity policy. Now, this means that we cannot see them as an independent socialist organisation, the people who produce that publication. However, it's obvious that there are, that some workers in Poland were very sympathetic to ideas that we would support. I stress too that Solidarity accepted the leading role of the party and the continuance of the state system. I pointed out the way the Gdansk Agreement was achieved. The point one, which stressed these political points, was done behind closed doors. It was not done openly and democratically by the delegates of the workers, and indeed it was done contrary to the views of those delegates. And with hindsight, I'm sure that this is a point which was worth noting. I did also stress that the police forces can be used, have been used, and may be used again. And this was an article written last August. I was not alone in predicting or realising that the movement Solidarity was extremely vulnerable to the state forces. But, however, I did not emphasise that Solidarity's demands were reformist. I did not emphasise that the Gdansk Agreement put Solidarity in the role of partnership and consultation with management and government over policy. And with hindsight, I wish I had, but I felt it was not really the time to do this. This was, however, the first time that in the Socialist Standard we had pointed out, with regard to Poland, the necessity for political organisation. And I think that is an important point to note. Still, I'm not going to go repeating ad nauseam. I did quote in the February article how little Solidarity deserved the support of the Socialist Party when I quoted from Solidarity statutes, which I read out to you just now, some of their aims. Now, the leaflet, which was published by the party in December, it started from explaining by economic factors alone why the militaries attempted to crush Solidarity. But, obviously, this is a fallacy. The debt, the per capita indebtedness of Poland was less than that of Ireland. And yet we don't see the military cracking down on trade unions in Ireland. Inflation rate is higher in Argentina and Israel than it is in Poland. And although Argentina and Israel are not at all democratic countries, nevertheless, the fallacy of trying to explain a political action by economic factors only is something which gives Marxism a very bad name, and I think we ought to try to avoid that in the future. Again, you get a nonsense statement in the middle of it. Because of the need to pay off debts, industrial production contracted. You could equally say, because of the need to pay off debts, industrial production increased or was expanded. They're both illogical statements, and only to be accepted on grounds of the leaflet was produced in a great deal of haste, and, well, it must, you shake your head, but it must have been produced in haste. There's no doubt about that. And it can be excused on those grounds. You do make mistakes when you rush at them, and this is to be expected. The important thing is to try to learn from these things. Paragraph 4 of that leaflet, however, was the point where I took issue with the Catholic Committee, and so did several branches. We have statements here about admiration and support of socialists for the workers organised in solidarity. And I wrote to the EC objecting to the phrase support. I objected that on the grounds that solidarity was reformist. And I also raised one or two other points, such as that it seemed a very bad time to tell workers in Poland, being frozen and beaten up and sent to jails or whatever, that the next step was to form a political party, when even their industrial organisation was seen in mismatch. At that time, it did not seem a very good time to say this. Now you go out and form a political party. And I pointed out, above all, that solidarity was not socialism. It was not even a class-conscious organisation. It was prepared to do deal with management and with government. And so, from this point of view, I felt that to say we support solidarity is contrary to party policy. However, the EC accepted the reply from the Pamphlets Committee, and indeed they adopted it. And in that reply, the Pamphlets Committee made out that I was mistaken in my understanding of the party's case on trade unions. They stated, we support workers who democratically organise in trade unions along sound lines. A 1975 conference resolution clarified that this was the party's policy. Now, about that 1975 conference resolution, I've written to Comrade Moss about this. He's referred the matter to the Pamphlets Committee.
25 minutes, Charles.
1 minute. I've asked, what is that conference resolution? Northwest London branch asked through the EC and have written twice to the Pamphlets Committee and had no reply. And I have not had a reply as to this conference resolution counted up in January by the Pamphlets Committee. I do not accept that there was such a resolution as described by the Pamphlets Committee in their letter. I do accept the party's case on trade unions, which I quoted in my next letter to the EC, and which I quoted from this manifesto statement, and which is available to party members. And the EC, in reply to this, when they got a reply from the Pamphlet Committee, merely noted it. They have never, in fact, taken a line on this other than defending the Pamphlet Committee's leaflet, which I feel was a very unsound leaflet. However, I had a letter from Comrade Knox in February, a private letter to me. I repeat, he says, the Pamphlet Committee would not wish to express admiration and support for Solidarity's reformist activity, only for the trade union activity. However, the way the leaflet was worded, it was a complete statement of support and admiration, and it did not specify we support their trade union activities only. Now, I'd like to go on to some of the other questions, like was it a trade union or was it something else? Neil Asherson says it's a political revolution crammed into the form of a trade union.
Charmian, please.
Well, it's, of course, a national cause.
Charmian, please. You've had nearly 30 minutes. If everybody has 30 minutes, you're not going to, you know, the meeting's just not going to work.
All right, to sum up, so far as solidarity was a class struggle, which deliberately refused to become a political struggle, my view is it had to fail.
Yeah, I just remind people like Harry, you know, democracy, when you talk about democracy, we must always remember that we have party members that can go on and on for hours and hours if they want to, and that would stop everybody else from speaking.
I
told the others, not me.
Clifford, no, but you suggested it.
Yeah, you marginally had your hand up first, if you want. A correction here, I think. Most of what has been said has at least been factually okay that I've heard so far. Charmaine, though, did say that the party would never support a sort of vague syndicalist position, that we would never use favour the idea of general strikes for a political objective. Now, as a matter of fact, that's not strictly speaking true, and party publications have frequently said we're not totally opposed to the general strike for on the grounds of a limited objective. When they aim closely at something, for instance, like, say, as a matter of thing, the phase three, or some government legislation making a pay pause a legal matter, so that, for instance, nobody could be awarded a pay rise whatsoever. Now, the party, if the trade union movement as a whole called a general strike just to say, no, the government's made that a law and we're going to demonstrate that it's not workable, that it's conceivable that the party would support a general strike on those grounds alone. Right? So you can't say that the party is definitely opposed to using the general strike for a political objective. That's one thing. Okay, you take that as a correction. Yes, I know, but you take that as a correction, Charmaine, right? I know, but now I'm going to push, drive that one a little bit further, right? We don't necessarily make a complete distinction between trade union activities on the one hand and political activities on the other. Once you've accepted that correction, then a wedge goes right the way through the argument where you try to polarise it on the grounds of one thing and another. Now, getting back into the history of this thing, it's been going on a long time in the party. I remember soon after I came in, about 1975, I remember Hardy getting up on the floor of the conference and giving a long rambling lecture on the history of the development of the trade union movement and so on. And he took the line that McDowell took earlier on when he first spoke, saying that the developing capitalist nations wanted trade unions. They wanted them there so that they could get into them, engineer them, split the workers up and so on. And Hardy produced a sort of verbal thesis in a way, maintaining that sections of the capitalist class, the industrial capitalist class particularly, brought the trade union movement into being in this country. And Hardy was actually laying it on the line and saying the capitalist class are responsible for developing the trade union movement. And that really stuck in my gullet, in a way, and it did in several other members as well, Ronnie Weinberg and Eddie Grant as well, said, what's the evidence for this? Where is the evidence? Look at reasonable historical writings on this, on the period from the end of the 18th century right up to the 19th century. E.P. Thompson's The Making of the English Working Class, for instance, show with a mass of detailed evidence how, from the early corresponding societies in the 1780s and 90s, the trade union movement burgeoned before, quite a long way before the first reform movement, which is considered to be the point where the industrial capitalist class got to challenge the landowning aristocracy. So you can't maintain that the trade union movement is born out of the desire of the capitalist class to overcome the aristocracy and all that sort of thing. Now, once you've got that as a position, you then back to the thing I think that Steve Coleman would have argued were he here. And you can say it in several ways. One is to say, in the simple form, and it's been getting a bit abstract, this discussion, if you were a worker in Poland now, would you pay your 2 zlotys a week to Solidarity? Now, the answer, I think, would overwhelmingly be yes. And that if there was a socialist party in Poland, we would have to say that. Yes, you would pay your 2 zlotys. The SPGB, of course, or the SPP, it would be SPP, Socialist Party of Poland. No, PSP, it probably be. Socialist Party of Poland wouldn't affiliate to Solidarity. That's fairly obvious. So in a sense, there is a separation. But once you've admitted that the membership as a whole wouldn't be most likely to be in the trade union, and that Solidarity is in the position, possibly, that the early illegal corresponding societies were in the 1790s, 1820s, and right up until the 1830s, and that the working class movement, broadly speaking, the labour movement, brings the political parties into being and can play a big part in the development of political development as well, then you've more or less argued yourself into the position of saying that it's balanced evenly on either side. As a result of the class struggle, both within the sections of the capitalist class and by the working class against the various sections of the capitalist class, political democracy and the trade union movement are born. As soon as you say, we won't support or we oppose Solidarity, you're denying the effect of the class struggle. You're denying the effect of the class struggle. I'm not talking only to you, but for people who think we ought to oppose Solidarity, not just for you.
then you're denying that the working class can make history. You're saying, more or less, that the capitalist class have got to hand you political democracy and trade union institutions on a plate, and that there's nothing you can do about it. Right? I'd like to say something later, but that's enough for you to be going on with.
When general statements are made, please don't assume that they're being made against you. It's a general statement that's quite...